Coming from the Lower Haight in San Francisco, it's the Are You Serious Show.
Are you serious?
I'm Are You Serious, and this is my show. Yeah. Welcome once again to the Are You Serious Show. She loves you, whatever. It's going to be a good show. All you paranoids out there, you've arrived at the place where your paranoia will be resolved because you'll be listening to Rob Bresny talk about his book, Pronoia is the Antidote to Paranoia. So this will all be new to you unless you listen to the last show, in which case it will be a second helping and an even more brilliant exposition of Rob Bresny's wonderful visionary work, or confusing gibberish, depending on how you look at it. Anyway, we're here with Jeff Deal, and welcome, Jeff. Glad to have you back in your own house. And Diana Brown. Welcome, Diana.
Thank you, Are You. Great to be here, as always.
Welcome. Come right in. You can't afford to miss this.
Step right up.
Natural disasters, and eventually the end of the world.
And we are now living in a gunless age in San Francisco. I'm sure you're aware of that, although you Marinites don't have this problem or this gift, depending on how you look at it. But we in San Francisco have taken a stand and have voted against guns of any kind. And as of April 1st of 2006, we'll have to turn all of our guns in if we have them.
How many do you have?
I don't really want to disclose that right now.
I have a few hundred thousand of them.
Actually. Really?
Yeah.
Stored in hills around Marin?
All over the place. A lot of, you know, submachine guns.
Do you have a GPS that, like, you're just driving, you realize you don't have a gun in the back seat, and it directs you to the one you've stashed nearby?
If I don't have a gun for each finger, I feel naked, actually. I
feel a little itchy. How about you, Jeff?
I have no guns, except for these right here.
Oh,
and believe
me,
if you were in the studio, you would be swooning one and all.
That's right.
The man has biceps that render guns completely pointless. Now, I want to say I have found this interesting website while looking up information about, you know, the pros and cons of this. Found this website, cronwatch.com. And on this website, the writer of this article, Jeremy Robb, he quotes Supervisor Chris Daley as saying, and this is right after Brazil had voted for handguns and guns of all nature. These Brazilians, this is the quote, and we have not substantiated this, these Brazilians are not smart enough to vote, said Supervisor Daley. How can an entire country vote so overwhelmingly not to ban guns, especially in a country that has a much higher murder rate than San Francisco? Maybe Brazilians can play soccer, but they can't vote here in November. I'm going to see to that. Now, obviously, that was preceding the election.
I didn't know the Brazilians could vote.
Yeah,
in
that's the confusing part.
That's what I was completely stunned by. It's like, who knew they had this write-in capability? Sao Paulo can vote in our election.
And some of these right-wing commentators sometimes do this thing. It's called lying.
Straw man? Oh.
Lying? You see, that's what I'm wondering.
See, and this happens, I mean, not just in these small websites, but in these, like, major talk shows. They do quite a bit of this thing called
lying.
Making stuff up.
A great, great innovation, actually, that they've added to the mainstream media.
Maybe you could get a degree in this.
But perhaps it's true.
If
it is true, Chris Daley should understand that voting and firing a gun takes about the same amount of intelligence. It's like pulling a trigger, you know, flipping a switch. Pretty much, you know, if you're smart enough to vote, you're smart enough to shoot. And it seems like a dangerous attitude.
But I think the point in both cases is, can you aim? I mean, with boating and shooting, aim is pretty much what it's about.
And the other weird reaction to this, of course, that everybody's talking about is Bill O'Reilly.
Yes.
Because San Francisco passed the thing against guns and also against military
recruiting on campuses.
He invited Al-Qaeda to come and blow us up, which
he just threw his hands up and said, that's it.
People are taking it a little too seriously, I think.
Well, I think so. I mean, it was pretty close.
O'Reilly is a ranter, you know. I mean, for instance, if I said, you know, people should grab Bill O'Reilly and shove broken glass up his ass, people wouldn't. They wouldn't think I really mean broken glass.
No, they'd think you meant smooth, nicely, like beach glass. Not that we're proponents of doing that to him necessarily. It was a close election. It was about 58-42. And, of course, the NRA is bringing suit against this, trying to turn this around. So we'll see what happens.
So does anybody have any opinions about this? I have, like, very little emotional attachment to the whole thing about gun control one way or the other. Because I think, on the one hand, they're going to create, a dangerous underground subculture, an industry, you know, people dealing guns. I mean, it already exists, but they'll expand on that. I understand, the whole thing about the Second Amendment, but I can't get really excited about it one way or the other. I'd rather walk into a public place without a lot of people packing.
Yeah.
Personally, I mean, I feel safer without a lot of people packing.
I think the problem is that it's like either side of this argument is sort of futile. I mean, on the one hand, gun control might work in a country where there aren't already firearms proliferated all over the place.
Right.
But there's no way to get rid of the guns that are already here. And then on the other hand, I do kind of support the Second Amendment, the ability to oppose the authoritarian regime that is fully armed with arms. But it always ends up these arms get used by white supremacists to try to,
And nobody's going to fight off the government in the 21st century with guns. They have better weapons.
Your
than
assault
that.
Rifle is not
and
much
then
of
you
a
get
match
their question.
That.
You know,
well, and I
should
think the Coalition Against Prohibition is right there with you, Jeff, because one of the representatives, Mike Egg, and if I'm pronouncing your name wrong,
I'm only
Mike,
there
I'm
for
sorry.
The moment that I'm speaking, by the way. Right now, I'm not there anymore.
You're not really
ahead.
There anymore, actually. He's moved on. But while he's moved on,
he switched his
Mike
target.
Egg
he switched his position because somebody
get
has
caught in the
gone at him.
Well, again, the Coalition Against Prohibition, the representative's quote is saying, and this is a board member of the coalition, most people don't like guns, but they don't want the opportunity to access them taken away. Because sometimes bad things happen to good people.
Well, this is actually perhaps the most extreme thing in terms of these kinds of measures that has come along. And I always thought that the argument between the two sides was ridiculous because they were really fighting over the type of gun control.
Right.
I mean, even the NSA's position, allows for some gun control.
Right.
So they were always just fighting around the edges, but they were playing it as if it was this huge political battle and they, getting lots of rednecks out to vote, on the basis of something that wasn't really happening. But now they got something, they can really scream about.
There you go.
San Francisco. Who cares? All right, we're here with Rob Bresny, and we've had Rob with us before, and he's here to talk about his new book, which is a little older now than it was a few minutes ago when we were talking to him earlier. It's called Pronoia is the Antidote for Paranoia. You also probably a lot of you know Rob Bresny as the author of the Free Will Astrology column, which is all over the place, and he was with World Entertainment War as well. Welcome back.
Thanks.
Rob.
Thanks for having me.
No problem, man. Good to see you.
Yeah.
So,
have you fixed that toilet problem?
We're having lots of trouble with the toilets around here, actually. On an earlier show, I commented that nobody wants to sit around watching a movie about a bunch of people being tolerant But looking at your chapter, Evil is Boring, you might take issue with that.
No, I completely agree with
really?
You.
Really? Oh, okay.
Oh, absolutely.
My
point is that the media has defined evil and corruption and decay as inherently interesting and far more interesting than stories of harmony and integrity and pleasure. But that's only because the thinkers among us, the artists among us, have been lazy in defining moments and events which are beautiful and interesting. And Ronald Reagan used to talk about 2,000 planes took off today and all of them landed safely. And that's true, right. But that's not my job. I don't care about that form of pronoia. I want interesting forms of pronoia.
Well, I mean, Reagan was very good at using a kind of pronoia, pronoia.
Yes, yeah. He was. Mm-hmm.
What's your kind of pronoia?
Well, let me say this. I mean, in order to have something interesting going on, there needs to be some kind of dynamic, right? There's even in your book, there's a sense that you are moving against some form of consciousness to, you know, with your own form of consciousness. You're saying, you know, this paranoid media view, this pop nihilism, these things are things that are bad, or that we should have less of anyway, and people should. So, I mean, there's a sense that there's still a dynamic of that makes things interesting for
you. I think that's a great story, because I consider pronoia the most taboo concept in our culture. There is an almost universal belief that is the opposite of the belief that John Keats, the poet, defined. Right. John Keats said, "If something is not beautiful, it is probably not true." But most
Lenny Bruce said, if something is not funny, it's probably not
well,
true.
That's even better. But most of the people that I call, somewhat ironically, the entertainment criminals today,
right.
Most of them say, if it is not ugly, it can't be true. Hmm. In other words, ugliness is by its very definition true.
It means you're deep.
What's that?
It shows that you're deep. If you show
that's
things
right.
in an ugly
cynicism
way,
is a sign of intelligence.
Yeah.
It's regarded
or a sign of sophistication.
That's right. And Harold Bloom, the critic, talked about how when he goes to parties and somebody asks him what's the real truth about that person, someone he knows, and he begins describing what he knows about that person.
They're looking for the dirt.
They're looking for the dirt, and that's the truth. That's the real truth about that person. And I think that one of the stories that's interesting to me is the rebellion, the dissident movement that can rise up against pop nihilism is in itself, I think, an interesting story.
And do you see other examples of this? Can you give us some other examples of manifestations of pronoia or?
Well, and one of the stories I have in my book, but it fits the definition we were talking about last time, which is mirabilia, those anomalous, delightful events that happen below the media threshold.
Right.
And who's to say what defines a story that's worthy of giving to the public? Journalists normally determine that stories about politics are inherently news.
Right.
But where did that come about? How did we possibly arrive at that juncture, or that news about death is inherently part of the news? Where did that come from?
Right.
Why not? Are You Serious had an incredible lovemaking session last night in which...
He did.
That would be news.
This didn't happen. I deny that outright.
Why is that any less news than Are You Serious?
Well, I guess, I mean, it
murdered a homeless tramp last night.
Now that happened, actually. And I'm not proud, but...
But just as an example, in my book, I present a numerous story,
right.
I think more than 1,000 stories, which I consider good news. It's interesting.
Yeah. It has to be interesting. To rise to the fact to be news, I mean, you know, the fact that I had a good meal today or
right.
had sex.
How about the fact that diamonds rain from the sky on Uranus and Neptune? Is that
interesting news.
I think so. How about Citigroup, which is one of the world's largest banks, has agreed to stop financing projects that damage sensitive ecosystems?
Well, that's both news and something that requires further investigation to make sure that there's not a little bit of shady.
But that's always true. Even in the bad news that's presented, you always got to investigate
right.
further to see if there's some benevolence in there
as
well. Or how about the fact that the World Health Organization reports that over 100 million acts of sexual intercourse involving more than 200 million partners take place on the Earth every 24 hours.
Now, this is an interesting piece of news.
Yeah, isn't that
absolutely?
Isn't that good?
And I occasionally you do get
yeah, but what percentage of those are transmitting AIDS?
Sorry, there you go. There's
the paranoia.
When what I propose is not that this kind of news is 100% of the news. I'm just asking for 50% of the airwaves, 50% of the space, or even 30%, or even 20%.
Sounds like the Bush administration and the war in Iraq, too. You know, they're kind of like, where's all the good news?
That's true. They want good news. So I mean, you have to watch for that card.
That's right.
Well, especially when it comes from some powerful organization that has a vested interest in convincing people
that's
of
right.
a certain truth.
But from time to time, people have made like the Good News Network or something, but they weren't successful.
Well, it's usually Hallmark card people, Reader's Digest people, Christian people that don't have a sense of artistry about it.
Yeah.
So you're saying if you were...
He picks out some really...
The best creative people did this.
Yes.
Why don't we do that?
Yes. In his book, Pronoia is the Antidote for Paranoia, Rob has some good news sections, and they are interesting entries. They're not just, you know, New Age kind of blinding white light stuff, but they're...
Well, you know what? This brings me to think about Boing Boing. You know, I mean, not to plug our friends too much, but every day they have a stream of interesting, mostly positive stuff.
Yeah. Boing Boing's a
great
example.
Not necessarily earth-shattering, but most of it's positive, and it's always interesting.
And that would come mirabilia. It would come under the category of mirabilia, these little miracles.
They're like idiosyncratic observations, but things that just are not getting...
And look at how many people want to see that.
It's huge.
I mean,
yes,
the
biggest blog.
Absolutely.
It can be soon maybe replacing the news.
Boing Boing's a great model. I have time for a commercial?
I was going to ask you to read another wonderful selection from your book, but you could do a commercial first, if you like.
I'll do a commercial at the
end. Do a quick...
This is from a longer piece called I Have a Dream. I'm going to read just a part of that.
Speak it, brother.
In a new world, I have a dream that Oprah Winfrey will buy up all the Pizza Huts on the planet and convert them into a global network of menstrual huts, where for a few days each month, every one of us, man and woman alike, can resign from the crazy-making 9-to-5. We'll drop out and slow down, break trance and dive down into eternal time, where we can sleep 8.5 hours every night, practice our lucid dreams, sing majestic, surrealistic, gymnastic love songs from the future, feast on chocolate as we converse with the little voices in our heads and soak in steamy herb baths, wear wildflower crowns and magic underwear made out of eagle feathers, spider webs, and 100-year-old moss. We'll cook up bigger, better, more original sins, and wilder, wetter, more interesting problems. I have a dream!
Lovely.
Terrific. Great.
Yes. Yeah. So, actually, Rob, I wanted to ask you to make up a dream that violates a taboo without hurting anyone.
For you or for me?
Yeah, just for either one of us. For everybody.
Okay.
For all our listeners.
Okay, you dreamed, are you, that you traveled to Antarctica with a group that was interested in exploring the Great Wastes. You arrived there, and the second day that you were there in this dream, you went out to an exceptionally pristine place where very few human beings have ever been. And it turns out that before you went to Antarctica, you had memorized 3 Rumi poems that you wanted to present to the great wastes of nature in an act of love. And so you got out there and you sat on snow and you began to hold forth with these Rumi poems, an end to words, speak not, and what do you know, this penguin comes ambling out behind the rock, comes up to you. You continue to give your lovely poem, and the penguin emits this flow of projectile vomit that hits you in the chest.
I'm starting to fall in love.
And you're shocked and you're dismayed, but you thought, well, at least I presented my gift of love here. Mm-hmm. And then when you get home, your friend tells you what you didn't know about penguins, which is they actually emit projectile vomiting to feed their children, their babies. And so the penguin was giving you a gift of love in return for the poem that you provided.
That was a yummy story from Ron.
Either that, or I thought it was trading vomit for vomit.
that was a taste treat. Speaking of taste treats, we're going to listen to a little music from a World Entertainment War. I guess this time Jeff Deal will either pick out the song he likes the most or dislikes the least. Right. And he'll never tell us which one that is.
Nope, but here it comes.
Are you serious?
Are You Serious show is brought to you by the mummified middle finger of Galileo's right hand, which is on display at a museum in Florence, Italy. May that finger inspire you to flip the metaphorical bird at anyone who proudly embodies the kind of high-level idiocy that Galileo had to endure.
And I have to say that this middle finger only gives us a few hundred dollars a week for the program, but we'll be upping the ante. Welcome, Diana. Diana is
Thank
here
you.
On time, but as a result of my own scheduling pronoia, in which I had Rob Bresny come early because I was feeling so good unconsciously.
Well, I'm delighted to be here. I've read, I'm a big fan of yours. I probably started reading you in the late 80s here when I first moved here. And I have probably one of the most predictable questions that you can be asked. But if, obviously, people have astrological signs, do projects have astrological signs? Is there a better time to launch something? And if the RU show has a birthday, I assume, when was the first show?
Good Lord. I don't know. I don't know the exact day. About 10 weeks ago?
Jeff in the control room is accessing that data for us now.
We have the embarrassing moment of a dead air. Mr. Bresny, you have another advertisement to stick in there?
Well, every astrologer has specialties, and my specialty is not particularly doing analysis of projects or countries, but it's definitely something that's worth investigating. People sometimes get married at a specific date because they want their marriage to have a particular birth sign with particular planetary configurations.
Very cool. Well, when we access that date of the actual birthday?
June 8th, 2005.
What were our stars like?
Well, you were born under the sign of Gemini, which is excellent for a talk show because Gemini is the gift of gab embodied. So that was accidentally, anyway, was very fortuitous.
No, we were analyzing it. We had our court astrologer just looking at this all the time.
Well, I'm glad you have a court astrologer. Who is your court?
I don't even have a court.
Yeah. Who's gonna say? Where's my crown?
I don't know, actually, Queen Mu used to do a lot of astrology for Mondo 2000. I don't think anybody paid any attention to it, but it probably worked out. I remember she hired Bart Nagel on the basis of his astrological sign, and he turned out to be quite a wonderful art director. Mm-hmm. So why does all this work then? So tell us.
Why does astrology work?
What's up with this astrology stuff? what's the deal with this astrology crap?
We're going to bust the ring of astrology kingpins.
Well, for one thing, I have to say that like everything else, I believe in astrology 80%. I believe in
Excellent.
Everything that I believe in, I believe in 80%. Because
I go up to about 99% on some things.
I wouldn't go that far because you're always in danger of becoming a literalist and a fanatic and a fundamentalist when you believe in anything so wholeheartedly. So I'm skeptical of astrology myself, and rightfully so, because there's a lot of astrology abuse out there. There are people that use astrology to refrain from taking responsibility for their actions, blaming it on some invisible outer force so that
it was meant to be.
That's right. I don't have any choice in the matter. And that's just a terrible
use
of astrology.
My moon has been in Saturn my entire life.
That's right. And I have no choice but to treat you in a really mean, cruel way. Yeah, that's astrology abuse.
It's not even blaming your parents. It's blaming the stars.
On the other hand, most of what the criticism directed towards astrology is now is based on analyses of tabloid astrology columns. Most of the so-called skeptics and critics have never done any research on real astrology. They've never read any of the real philosophers of astrology. I liken it to an architectural critic who would go to a strip mall and say, the art of architecture is debased and corrupt. And most critics of astrology have no idea what astrology is about. For instance, many of them say that, how do these invisible beams come down from the planets and move us like puppets? And most astrologers, in fact, don't believe in invisible beams coming down from the planets.
But there is some sort of force.
Most astrologers believe that the planets are merely divinatory devices, divinatory signs. They are just as, say, tarot reading or tea leaves or I Ching. However, they are extremely predictable, and they can be foreseen thousands of years in advance and in the
past. So then they are like a window or something giving you access to some information.
A
right?
symbol
but that
system.
Information that is out there has some association to what's going on here, though, right? Some correlation.
As above, so below, which is the ancient Hermetic.
There is this random aspect, which one presumes to be divinatory. I mean,
It's not random at all, because you know, always know where the planets are going to be.
Right.
But the art of it is, and it's not a science, in my opinion. Right. Astrology is an art. It's not a science. Right. The art of it is in applying the symbolic movements of the planets to find meaning here. And that takes a skilled interpreter.
Well, speaking of beams of light, in your book, you have a passage where you have a really uproarious great sex with the sun.
Yes.
And what really freaked me out in reading this particular section, and right in this very section, you say that you haven't had any mind-altering drugs since 1986.
What? That's true.
And I was just shocked.
Inconceivable.
And we were wondering if we could make a copy of your brain chemicals and your neural patterns
and keep them
as a stash. Yeah. All right, will you make these, when this becomes possible, will you make these available so we can all have experiences like this on the Natch?
I think
we can sell them in hits. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. Hits of Bresny.
Yeah. Well, who was it that said, I don't take drugs, I am drugs?
I believe it was Salvador Dali.
That's right, Salvador Dali. Yeah. I mean, that's the goal. I read a book by P.E.I. Bonewits, who was a Wiccan back in the 70s, and he really advised against taking drugs because he felt that it interfered with your ability to cultivate, through your willpower, access to altered states. Mm-hmm. And through your willpower, through your conscious intention.
So what are some techniques that you use to go into altered states to be all draggy and serious for a moment?
Well, of course, in the moment is meditation or dance or singing or fucking or all those things work really well. But it's a long term process.
Did you make up your own rituals to do that sort of thing?
Or use rituals of various occult schools that I've studied at? But
what about just like a focus on like absurdity or irony?
Absolutely, crazy wisdom. Yeah, I mean, we're coming up. We're going to have a bliss blast, which is 24 hours of freedom from paranoia, cynicism, and sneers. It's coming up. And one of our ways of entering an altered state in the bliss blast day is to stop making sense. Mm-hmm. Put on an inflatable sumo wrestler costume and play a bagpipe as badly as possible.
Wait a second, that's what I did a couple of nights ago.
Steal the lint from the dryer.
Windows.
Steal the lint from the dryers in a laundromat and use it to make animal sculptures for someone you secretly admire. See how far you can spit a mouthful of beer.
Well, I would try to come to this event. Where and when will this be happening?
It's going to be in the Bay Area, September 22nd. I'm going to be
okay. So those of you listening to this, it already happened, and it was great.
September 22nd.
No, because this is our second interview.
Oh, I see. Right.
But we could maybe tack on.
Well, we're time traveling
something.
A little bit.
Tell us how you enjoyed that event, because I know you were gone.
Yeah. How was that event, anyway?
It was trying, because for part of the events that I do, I do reverse panhandling. I stand out in a traffic island on a road or a highway, and I give away money. I have a sign, that says,
"I want to do that.
I love to give. I need to help. Please take some money." And I have a roll of
any amount will do.
Any amount will do.
And of course,
anything helps.
The wealthy people in the Lexuses and the Porsches and the BMWs are always more prone to stop and actually take the money than the poor folks. Yeah, so it was a little trying, but.
Right. Well, there's a lesson somewhere to be learned in that. That would make a good program for us, actually. We can send them out with an iRiver and record these
webcasts too.
These experiences.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Mr. Bresny, aside from this book and your astrology column, you still have a music thing going on?
I do.
So tell us, working on a
CD called World Kiss right now, which will be the soundtrack for.
Is this part of World Entertainment War?
It's not officially part of World Entertainment War. No. But I'm going to do this is more a mix of incantation. It's part of what I call the sacred uproar, which is kirtan, spoken word, preaching, Dionysian lecturing, prayers, and things like that. So it's going to be a little bit lower key than World Entertainment War. And then after that, I'm going to do more of a rock album.
Huh. Well, great. Does anybody else have any questions for Mr.
Well, I came in late, and I would just like to be caught up a little bit on Zoom and Boom versus Gloom and Doom. How can I get there? I mean,
do you want to get there?
I want to get there. Can I get an amen?
Praise Brittany.
Hallelujah.
Are you ready?
I'm ready to zoom and
ready
boom.
Are you ready to flush away your doom and gloom?
I believe I am, brother.
Are you ready to praise what there is to praise out there?
I am ready to
find the little things that are worthy of praise.
Brother Stefan, are you ready to praise?
I am.
He is taken by the Spirit. He is now speaking in tongues. I am
talking in tongues, brother, are you?
I am talking out of tongues, actually. My tongue is frozen in place. But do tell.
You have to have the intention, my child.
It's about my intention.
Your intention is to perceive the world in all of its beauty.
I wish to perceive.
Do you promise to do? Now, that doesn't mean that bad things won't sometimes happen to you.
Nay, I believe that.
That doesn't mean that sometimes your shadow won't rise up and bite your behind.
I have been bitten.
Sometimes it will.
And indeed it might again.
But if you can get to the 80% mark.
To the 80% mark.
If you can find in the course of your daily life.
In the day.
Little experiences that delight you,
golden
that thrill you,
jewels
that bring you joy. I want you to concentrate on looking for those events in your life.
I will look.
And the other thing I want to ask you to do is count up how many times you say no in a given day. How many times you say, I don't like that. I don't agree with them.
Ooh.
That makes me mad.
Can you hear
I want buzz? You to count up how many times you do that, and I want you to bring that to the 50% mark in your life so that you're saying, yes, I like that. Yes, I agree with that. Yes, that pleases me 50% of the time.
Viewers, I want you to help me remain accountable to this. I'm going to start bringing in a tally weekly. We're going to see how many no's I can let go of.
That's right. Right to the Are You Serious Show, or rather, right to Diana Brown, care of the Are You Serious Show, and remind her to... keep this positive attitude, and you folks at home,
thank you.
Also, take Mr. Bresny's advice, and thank you, Rob Bresny, for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Is there any last minute, first moment thoughts or advertisements or major?
Well, I did want to mention that this show has been brought to you by the decisions you didn't make, the words you never spoke, the actions you've avoided, and the codes you haven't broken.
Thank you. Good night.
We'd like to thank Rob Bresny for joining us this week. The music you heard was Lovemakers on Video by Matt Height, a mashup. Next week, Tim Cavanaugh from Reason Magazine returns. The Are You Serious Show is part of the Mondo Globo Network. Subscribe to all of our shows at mondoglobo.net. Thank you for listening, and don't be afraid of the dark.